This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. Every other week, I'll be joined by a guest. We'll impart our own sex wisdom, ask our own sex questions, and we'll go over all the things they don't teach you in school. But in order to do this, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
In this episode, we speak to the curator of La 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 Let Me Explain about modern dating.
I think it's by 2035, more than half of all relationships will have started online.
What happened in her own life to make her start the blog?
I had to self-validate. I had to learn how to self-soothe. I had to learn how to break the habits.
And what men are doing wrong in the bedroom.
They'll be like... Well, that's just you. Every woman I've been with has had orgasms. And it's like, yeah, but we know that if you've slept with 10 women, at least 8 of them were faking.
Hello and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite and I'm joined as ever by accredited sex and relationship therapist Kate Campbell. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
How are you today, Mum?
I'm good. How are you today, Diggs?
I'm okay. I'm
poor
okay.
Diggs has been under the knife.
Under the knife? Is that how they refer to it?
Yes. You've had an operation.
What kind of operation?
A hernia repair, a double hernia repair.
What is a hernia?
It's when part of your body falls through a hole in another part of your body.
Falls through a hole? How does that hole appear?
I don't know. Well, there's gap. Sometimes there's a weakness and it forces a hole, or sometimes there is just a natural gap and it shouldn't go through the gap. Like I have a hernia with my brain. My brain comes through a gap into my spinal cord. So I have a hernia.
Is Chiari, which you have, that's a type of hernia?
That's a hernia, yeah.
So we're like, kind of like...
It must run in the family, mustn't it? It's on both sides.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
We're just weak and puny. Our bits all just fall out.
I mean, but it's not. That's something that another thing that bonds us both. You have a hernia of the brain. I have a hernia of the balls.
The other end.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why this is actually somewhat to do with sex, is that I had two hernias. One was by my belly button. The other one was in my groin. And it was so big that it had gone into my scrotum, which I'm happy to say now because obviously it's not there anymore, but it slipped down and it was the size of an egg. And, you know, those very few unlucky people that saw it, most people didn't even realise, which tells you a lot about how people don't really...
They don't pay attention, do they?
They don't pay attention, really. But those...
They don't scrutinise your ball sack.
No. Let's clip that. That's great. So actually, do you know what? The big takeaway from this whole thing is scrutinize the ball sack. But there you go. So anyway, that was removed under the knife. And you said then that I bounced back, which is very kind. You know, when I should have been feeling a lot more poorly, but you said that I bounced straight back. Because I want you to say that again so everyone knows that I'm a big, brave boy. Just a bit louder for the people at the back.
Yes, indeed. But I mean, actually, this is a good moment to say to people that you should really examine your testicles if you have them. Just hold them in your hand and sort of roll them around and run your fingers over them from time to time, just to see if there are any lumps or bumps. People always think, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to know if I've got cancer or something. But it doesn't have to be that. It could be your hernia falling down.
Like mine, yeah.
Exactly. So there's lots of reasons to examine your breasts and testicles, you know, apart from looking for really grim things. There are lots of other things that you can find there as well.
How? And examining, apparently, dude, correct me if I'm wrong, examining your testicle, it's quite good to do that in a shower sometimes or after a shower because it's all hot.
It's all hot and warm. And so it's easier to...
Or maybe a bath.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's easier. And so with that, you do just take a ball in your hand and try and move your fingers around the entire circumference.
Just weigh it in your hand, first of all, and just sort of let it roll around your hand and then gently, gently touch it with your fingertips.
Mm. And if there's any irregularities or bumps and stuff that aren't on both sides, because anything symmetrical you can be happy with, because there's those like wires that sort of go around the back, which sometimes you're like, you feel those and you're like, ugh.
They're blood vessels.
Usually, quite right.
And things like that.
And so you get worried about those, but when you realise it's symmetrical and it's on the other side as well, you're sort of like, fine. But anything that's not, then you can think, uh-oh. Also, if ever you get a checkup in the doctors anyway, at least I've found, you know, when you've gone to a gum clinic or whatever, they'll always be like, if there's any reason to pop your... Even for this hernia thing as well, like, it's completely nothing to do with sex, this hernia thing that I had. The guy was just sort of like, whilst we're here and your trousers are down, I might as well just check your balls out, which is great. So if you ever worried that your hands aren't too doctory, just go in and they'll do it for you.
I can imagine everybody queuing up.
I know, that's true, actually.
Having their balls weighed.
This is weirdly, wasn't what was supposed to, this was supposed to be, but it now become a PSA. Scrutinise the balls, both your own and others. And scrutinise the boobs, both your own and others. Also, boobs. We've talked about how to do it with... boobs is a bit harder, isn't it? Don't you have to lift an arm above your head?
Hold your arm up and put your hands flat and then do the fingertip bit. But do it flat,
flat
with the flat
on
of your hand
boob.
First. Yes. Under your arms.
Under your arms.
Under your arms.
Under your arms.
And then on your boobs as well. And right underneath and lift. So sort of lift them up and kind of again examine them sort of together so you can see if there's anything different. Again, you know, if you suddenly notice a big difference on one side than the other. And look in the mirror if there's puckering or anything like that. Mm. You know, or reddened areas. That's something to be concerned about as well. And a lot of this stuff is nothing to do with growths or anything like that. I mean, obviously you can get cysts and things, but you can have infections and things like that as well.
Yeah, love all that. Love all that. We should probably get into today's great interview, which we've got coming up on something a bit left of, I mean, now after what we've all talked about, a bit left of field, something completely...
We're not going to be talking about any more about testicles, are we?
Maybe.
No, we're not. We're going to be talking about modern dating.
Yes, we are. We will be talking about modern dating, like you say, with the wonderful qualified social worker, podcaster, and now Sunday Times best-selling author, La La La, Let Me Explain. Thank you so much for joining us, La La.
Yay, thank you for having me. I'm honoured.
Oh, thank you so much. So just to get right into it, for people that don't know, perhaps... Who are you and what do you do?
Well, I go by the name of La La La, Let Me Explain on Instagram. Before that, I was a social worker. And before that, I was a sex and relationships educator for the NHS, delivering SRE education to schools and youth settings. And then I took all of my knowledge from those careers, plus my knowledge of dating lots of shit men, and put it all together and made an Instagram, which I attempt to help people navigate the dating scene safely with.
And really? so was there a particular thing that made you decide to start the Instagram page? Or
it was I talk about this in my book, actually. It was like I had a sort of series of epiphanies, you know. I'd done all this learning and I'd got my head around feminism and toxic masculinity and the effects of sexism and the systemic oppression of women and all of that, you know. I was dealing day in, day out with sexual exploitation and domestic violence, and had great knowledge of attachment theory and all of those kind of things. But I was not applying any of my professional knowledge to my own personal life whatsoever. I'm not sure why, really. But, you know, I was doing all this stuff for women at work, and then I was coming home and begging men who were treating me with indifference and ambivalence and sometimes real nastiness to love me better and to treat me better. You know, I got to the point where I'd dated person that I call the fuck boy that broke the camel's back, who was just like a bag of walking red flags.
Yeah.
And I got to the end of that, and it was like all these things started sparking off in my head, like, what are you doing? You should have seen that red flag. You should have seen that one. Why didn't you see it? And when it all started kind of coming together in my head, I was like, every woman needs to know this. But also, I need to get this out. You know, I and this is what I started writing a blog, and the blogs were almost like therapy for me, really. And the therapy was so cyclical, I guess, because there were so many women reading the blogs and then going, wow, this is me. This is what I've been doing. So that really helped my healing as well. And it all just sort of grew from there.
Yeah. And you've fostered like quite a community on there. Like there's loads of people who you've met through the Instagram account and stuff who you have on your podcast, and it just feels like people really come to you for help and advice.
Yeah. I think that people trust me because of my professional background, but I think that people trust me more in this capacity than they did when I was a social worker, not only because of all the awful things and the misconceptions about social work, but in social work, I'm just telling you about you and you're not hearing anything about me. I can't share anything about, and Kate, you'll know this as well from the way that you work. It's very one-sided. Whereas with this, I can be vulnerable. I can say, look, I get it. I've been there, you know. And I think people warm to that because that they can see that I'm not going to judge them. They can see that I'm probably able to relate to them. So it gives a much more rich relationship, I think.
And at the moment, I feel like what we want to talk to you today about is just sort of the state of dating at the moment, because a lot of the questions that you get are about getting into a relationship, but also what it's like when you're in a relationship. Like we've already referenced like red flags and stuff. So I just wanted to ask you some questions about that, really, and how, where we are with modern dating, because Mum and I have done loads of episodes where we talk about, you know, having a partner, but we haven't actually really talked about dating and like actually getting a partner and stuff. So I guess the first thing is what I think when I think of modern dating now is dating apps. How have they changed the game?
Have you tried the apps?
Yes, extensively.
Sorry, and that's the thing, isn't it? There is, and this is what I want people to remember, is that there is hope. There is, you can have success. There's loads of people. I think it's by 2035, more than half of all relationships will have started online. So I don't think it's something that we should necessarily be running scared from or freaking out about. But I think it's really important to acknowledge the reality of how much dating apps have changed the dating scene and how many pitfalls there are. And I think probably one of the most common things that I face in my inbox is women in particular, but men who date men also come to me with this kind of stuff, which is this sense of this constant need for men to chase sex, but not chase sex explicitly, because that's fine. If you're on the apps and you're like, I'm here for a fuck, you know, let's meet up tonight. There's nothing wrong with that, as long as you're doing it safely. And when I say safely, I don't just mean using condoms. I mean not meeting up with random people and going to their house if you haven't sussed out all of the safety stuff. But it seems to be this drive towards what a lot of people call like finessing women into bed. So it's lots of women are meeting men who are really saying all the right things, who come across as though they want to date them, who promise the world, and then they're being ghosted pretty soon after sex. Or if they're not ghosted after sex, things certainly fizzle out. You know, they're not messaging every day like they were. And then things develop into a situationship rather than the relationship that the person was expecting. So you're seeing each other, but you haven't had that conversation of what are we? And perhaps you don't want to have that conversation because you know that that may scare the other person off because they'll be thinking you're too keen or you want too much. So you're left in this state of like, well, I'm seeing you regularly. You're the person that I call. You call me often, drunken nights out, you know, you text me happy Valentine's Day, but I don't know where this is going or how you see me or whether you're sleeping with other people. So you're stuck in this sort of purgatory, really.
And do you think that's like, and the apps have led to a bit more of that as well?
I don't know, just know if it's the apps. I think it's a combination of so many things. I'm not anti-sexual liberation for women whatsoever. I'm incredibly positive about it. And I think it's needed and necessary. But sexual liberation really actually was designed to liberate women from being sex slaves for men, actually. It was to empower women to have sex for ourselves and to be able to do things like Me Too and to speak out about how much sex we were having was not sex we wanted, was rape or sexual assault or whatever. But sexual liberation also came alongside contraception becoming more widely available. And so women really were liberated. We weren't held back by the worries of pregnancy and, you know, abortion became legal in many places. And again, that's incredibly liberating for many reasons, but sexual liberation for women wasn't backed up with education for men. So while we were out there going, yeah, we can fuck now, those of us who have sex with men weren't necessarily then getting the greatest experiences because A, we're still not frequently having sex that serves us, but also it's then sort of done this thing with misogynistic men and fuckboys, which is that where they used to have to be in a relationship with a woman to have regular sex, and sexual liberation meant that actually far more women were up for having casual sex. So for a lot of men who don't realize that they need that their emotional needs met just as much as women do, it was a bit like, whoa, people are willing to fuck. And actually now I can meet them really easily on Tinder. So I don't know if I'm sort of accurately phrasing this in the way that, yes, I think sexual liberation is wonderful. Yes, I think women should be able to fuck whenever they want. But also, I don't think a lot of women who are out there having casual sex were A, intending for it to actually be as casual as what it was, and B, are actually even getting any kind of orgasms or even any pleasure out of it. And so I think that dating apps have just facilitated a kind of scene for all this to happen really easily. But I think women are losing out. And I think that I think that situationships are often, not always, because men can be the ones going, what are we to? But I think often situationships are women who have gone down that route and started sleeping with somebody because actually they want the emotional connection, they want the love, but in order to meet the bar for what everyone else is doing, that they had to give this guy sex. And then you're sort of trapped in this ambiguous, shitty situation.
Yeah.
And it's particularly difficult, I think, for people who have, feelings about being in relationships in the first place. They're worried about being good enough. And they're the very people that seem to go and feel more empowered by having sex with a lot of different men. But at the same time, are then really, really worried because the relationship doesn't progress. I mean, it's a situationship, it never develops into a relationship. And then they think, what's wrong with me? And they don't think, well, the context was, this isn't going to be a relationship. Why did you think it would progress? But they do. And then they go into therapy thinking, there's something really, really badly wrong with me. This is awful.
So is that something you see more?
Yeah, very much so.
That's interesting, isn't it? I think sometimes what we do, and I've certainly done this myself, is thought, you know, I'm not really that into this guy. I've just broken up someone else. I really just want a bit of attention, maybe go on a date. If we end up sleeping together, then cool. But, you know, we're not really a match, so I'm not going to fall for him. That's not what I want. And then what I find, and certainly a lot of women that I know find, again, you can't say all, but a lot, is that after being intimate with them a few times, 2, 3, 4 dates, you start to go, oh, no, actually, I want more. Even if actually the reason that you want more is not because actually you think this person is wonderful and you've got loads in common with them and you actually really enjoy spending time with them. You want more because it's validating to be wanted, and them not wanting more becomes, you know, an indicator of your self-worth, or that's how we start to perceive it. So then again, it really leads to a bash to your self-esteem. And then of course, when your self-esteem is bashed, then you want to be in it more. You're less empowered to say, no, fuck this. He's an idiot anyway. Why? I don't even want a relationship with this guy. So it can really, then you get trapped in that cycle of like low self-esteem. And it gets even lower every time you see this person. They don't call you the next day or whatever, you know, and it's just messy.
And there's loads of pressure as well. I mean, in terms of being sexual together, it feels like there's a lot of pretense going on when a relationship isn't a relationship, and people get into bad habits. So then if it does become a relationship, you've got to undo what you did. You know, like if you're trying, so many women trying to please the guy have loads of response pressure. So it doesn't really matter how great they are as a lover in lots of ways. The woman is so nervous that she's not going to come. So she pretends, she fakes it. And then the guy thinks, this is how to do it. And it's not anymore. And I mean, we talk about this all the time because it's such a big thing now. And they still don't know after years together that by then, the guy still doesn't know what turns on the woman.
I get this so often in my DMs, is this question of, I'm with a really lovely man and I really like him and I really don't want to hurt his feelings, but we've been together 6 years and I've never had an orgasm, but he thinks I've had one every time. How the fuck do I deliver this information to him without crushing his entire world and making him think, well, what else have you lied about, you know? And it's incorrect. I mean, what do you advise people in that situation?
Start talking about wanting something new. So let's try something different. I really want to try something different. And then say, oh, I like that. They're even better than what we were doing before. Let's do more of that. But I mean, if they come into sex therapy, it's not a problem because they sort of go back to the beginning and start all over again anyway. But if they're just, you know, if it's just a kind of one-off and it's just an inquiry, then...
But would you recommend not telling the truth or not being 100% honest about the fact that you've never actually come with them? Would you say that you need to skirt over that a little bit to protect a relationship?
It depends on the relationship, doesn't it? Because for some people, it would be absolutely devastated. So it's really difficult to know because everybody talks so much about honesty, but sometimes it doesn't actually pay. And it's really, really difficult. Nobody talks about, I mean, when people started to talk about women having an entitlement to great sex, then a different kind of problem was created because then men wanted to see that their women were having a great time and felt diminished if they weren't. So then you've got response pressure, which I guess is what we're talking about, and where they're thinking, oh my God, I've got to please him, but actually this isn't doing it for me. And women seem to take the responsibility either way.
And I think porn has so much to answer for in this, because we learn, and actually even just mainstream films, you know, I've never seen a sex scene in a movie where a woman doesn't come from penetration and where she's not, you know, panting and screaming loudly within seconds of a penis entering her. You know, I never felt that magic when a dick entered me ever, but I thought, well, that means there's something wrong with me. So I have to pretend that it feels wonderful because, you know, otherwise I'm not keeping up with the Joneses. I'm not pleasing him like every other woman is. And you're right. It becomes this whole thing of giving him the responses that he wants, then we become so focused on ourselves. You know, a lot of sex that women are having is just completely unpleasurable because not only are we fake moaning, but we're also the entire time thinking, what do my tits look like? What does my bum look like in this position? Is he satisfied by this? Is everything okay with him? You know, all the while he's scratching at our urethra and fuck all is happening, you know, and we're not articulating that. So worried that we're bad in bed, but not even noticing that actually you're really bad in bed. You haven't even gone anywhere near my clitoris. You haven't bothered to, you know. So I think there's so much still now that we need to go right back to the beginning, as you said, you know, like, and this really should start with sex education in schools. Girls and boys need to be taught that this is about pleasure for both parties and that's not going to happen if we're completely self-conscious, not only about the sex side of stuff as I described, but also the situationship stuff of where do I stand in this? Have I got to put on this performance and be the best in bed and give him anal even though I don't want to? Because that will eventually lead to him saying, yeah, you can be my girlfriend, you know? It's all so sort of tied up in all of, you know, it all comes together in the same box, really.
But one of the things we talk about, which I always find it's really difficult for me to get my head around, is like feeling empowered enough to be like, actually take control of your own pleasure. Because I think, again, like, it makes a lot of sense. Like when you're dating someone and when you're having sex with them, you want them to be having a good time. That's basically what we're talking about. And it makes sense that should be your priority. As long as they're happy, then I'm happy and they will feel the same way. But how often, because it's never really discussed or talked about, that actually ends up with both parties being like thinking they're doing something, a favour for the other person, but both of them aren't actually getting what they want. So there's this weird thing where actually you need to start taking care of your own pleasure. Now, obviously, the massive caveat there is you need to do that consensually and safely and all that sort of stuff. But when you're doing these things, like what actually feels nice for me and how do I communicate that with my partner? But that is the hardest thing to do. So when they're scratching around at your urethra, like you say, how do you say, hey, in a nice way, how do you be like, hey, do you mind, you know, try this instead? Like, how do you do that?
Yeah, Yeah, but I mean, I think it's so much more even, we need to go back far more basic than that. And really educate men, mainly men and boys, that penis in vagina is not what's going to work for most women. But the problem that I find, and well, I've done lots of story threads about this and get such a big reaction from women, is that men don't like that. And men don't want to hear it. Or a lot of men, not all men. A lot of times when you say, just letting you know, like 75% of women, they need clitoral stimulation. A penis is doing very little. They'll be like, well, that's just you. You can't speak for all women. You know, I've never had any complaints before. Every woman I've been with has had orgasms. And it's like, yeah, but we know that if you've slept with 10 women, at least 8 of them were faking most of the time. They don't want to hear it. And then it becomes this really difficult conversation where actually, if you like this person and you want to have a relationship with this person, then it instantly becomes this defensive and you become this annoying feminist who's trying to speak for all women because you've got a shit vagina. I can sit there and say on my stories until I'm blue in the face, be honest, be open, communicate in a non-confrontational manner. But actually the reality of those conversations is not always as it should be. It's not always men being receptive to go, oh shit, okay, let's try this. What works for you? It's very often, well, no. Yeah, it's worked for me before. But the thing that I find that women are extremely confused about, or a lot of women, is that if they haven't squirted, they don't believe they've come.
God, yeah.
So I get a lot of messages from women who say, I get a nice feeling, I get a tingle, I get throbbing or whatever, but I've never come. I've never had an orgasm because there was no liquid. And I'm like, well, you know, we're so lacking in sex education. You know, these grown women who say these things to me, you know, and I didn't learn half this stuff until I was, sorry, my dog's barking in the background.
That'd be fine. Yeah. It just wants to get involved in the conversation.
Yeah, she's a femur. She's never come. Yeah.
Another one. Yeah, and again, do you reckon there's porn has a lot to answer
everything.
For there as well?
Yeah. It's interesting because I was reading an interview with this couple, and it was about rough sex and strangulation in bed, and it was this really interesting point, exactly as you sort of noted there, which was that they'd been together for years, and he'd been choking her consensually during sex, and then one day after many years together they had this conversation where he was like, what do you like about that, you know, it's a kind of strange thing to do or whatever, and she said, I don't like it, I only do it because I thought you liked it. And he was like, I hate it, I only did it because I thought you liked it, you know. And I think this is happening in bedrooms up and down the land, and it's such a strange concept that you would allow somebody inside your body who you're not confident to be able to have a conversation with, you know?
And did he do that because of what he saw on porn?
Yeah. People watch porn as a, like, sex manual, a lot of people. And it's really, I mean, I'm 40, so the porn that we were exposed to when we were teenagers, it was very minimal. We'd watch Eurotrash. You know, you'd see these top shelf magazines, and you might, if someone's parents were really lax, you know, go to someone's house after school and they'd whip the dad's VHS out, you know, and it would be women with huge bushes, and it was very, very different. And now, you know, the porn that they're exposed to, these are the things that are getting into their sexual psyche, and all of them involve the degradation of women, all of them, in one way or another, and no pleasure. It is just about fuck as hard as you can, whether she wants it or not. And that is seeping out into our wider consciousness, you know, and this is what women in the main often are experiencing in bed. And not just young women, you know, I get a lot of women who are in their 50s who have gone onto dating apps after divorce and who are just shocked by how much the landscape has changed, by why men are putting their hands around their throats during first time sex, why they're having their hair pulled or they're being spat at, you know, things they never experienced when they were dating in the 90s or 80s or whatever. Porn has fucked us all.
Yeah, literally.
Quite literally.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
But if you look in magazines and things like that, you know, and to a certain extent on podcasts and social media and everything, you're getting talk about how to make someone scream, how to have the best orgasm ever, not just an ordinary one. It's got to be amazing. And there's nothing about tenderness or about touch in general, and about how lovely touch can be, how lovely gazing can be, how lovely it can be just to lie together naked. All of the things that, you know, when people discover them, they say, oh my goodness, I had no idea this existed, because they go straight for the genitals and there isn't anything else. And it's just, and that's very sad.
It is sad. And there's so many, again, I remember I did a thread where we were talking about what are your favourite things, and people were talking about just being stroked and tickled and having their hair played with and their back rubbed and all of those things, and how that is actually part of making love. And so many people sort of responded like, this is what I like. I don't want doggy style, you know, flipping off the chandeliers. This is what I would be totally satisfied if this is what my entire sex life comprised of, but I feel kind of pathetic. You feel a bit sort of Mills and Boone in trying to deliver that information of like, well, actually stroke me with a feather or whatever. And again, it goes back down to communication, doesn't it? And really feeling empowered to go, this is what I like. There's no shame in anything that I like. This is what gets me off. And only sleeping with people who you can feel really safe to communicate that shit with. Why we're not doing that.
But people don't know what they like, because they haven't tried anything really apart from what they've seen in the porn. And, you know, sometimes when people come into sex therapy, you give them a really simple exercise like touching one another's hands or something, or just stroking a shoulder or something clothed, you know, not even. And there's usually a sex ban in place when they do this, so there's no pressure. They're just supposed to be exploring a little bit, stroking someone's face, gazing into their eyes, something like that. They do that for a little while. It's so hot. So many of them break the ban.
Yeah.
I shouldn't admit that, because I don't want my clients doing that all the time. But honestly, I mean, and it's not sexual. I mean, stroking a finger, you wouldn't think would be incredibly sexual, but it is, given the right context, given the amount of time, given the concentration and the focus. And instead of being in your head thinking, is my partner liking this? Am I doing this right? Is it okay? Am I responding in the right way? Do I look okay? Is my bum big? Just as you said, instead of all of that, they're just focusing on one another. Totally different experience.
Yeah. And I think celibacy really helped for me as well. I know you said about the sex bans with your people that you're working with, and actually I think that that's can really work for single people as well. For me, I went completely celibate for about 18 months, and that really changed everything for me. Wow. It really improved the quality of sex that I was having, but also made me choose the people that I was dating much more carefully. Mm-hmm. And that was in line with the spirituality stuff, where it was a bit sort of, my body is a temple, you know, it's kind of fresh now, and nobody else can enter it unless they're really fucking great. You know, it really helped me feel much more valuable, you know. And then when I felt more valuable, I expected better sex. I expect to be cared for.
And that is exactly what we would focus on in sex therapy. So that when Diggs was talking about people having, you're taking responsibility for their sexual experience, that it's checking in with yourself and knowing what you need for yourself, and are you treating yourself with respect? Because if you're not, how do you expect anyone else to treat you?
Absolutely.
It's so important.
It's so difficult, though. I mean, I think so many people, and this is me included, I think when I'm really honest with myself, a lot I've thought to myself, right, you know, celibacy is probably like what's needed right now, and yet it just crawls back into your head. You're just like I need someone else to think I'm fit, you know. I need someone else to think to like me. And it's really interesting, because I actually think that takes a lot of willpower, which I know sounds mad, because it's obviously like, well, other people have to have sex with you, but do you know what I mean? I feel like it takes a lot of willpower to be celibate for 18 months.
I was sort of open and willing. I never put celibacy in a thing of like, if I met the perfect person right now, I would talk to them, you know, and I'd see what was going on. But I was so reliant on external validation. I was so reliant on my self-esteem coming from what these random fucking men thought of me. Mm. And when I had said to myself in my head, no, I just don't want any, of them anywhere near me for a little while now, I knew then that I had to get my self-esteem, I had to self-validate, I had to learn how to self-soothe, I had to learn how to break the habits. And so it was just to force myself into that. And then I quickly learned. And again, that was when I started the page. So I guess that maybe I was also getting validation from other people. I was getting validation from other women. I was getting people then saying to me, God, I really relate. This is brilliant. You know, so I guess it wasn't all self-validation. It was I was in a kind of unique position, because then I was also, you know, getting it from other people. But it was, I recommend it to anyone who sort of feels like they're in a bit of a mess and they need to just stop and have a detox, basically. And it's what it feels like, a kind of detox.
Yeah.
Because so many people use sex as sort of mood regulator. And again, it's something that's been encouraged because orgasms kind of reset you. And so you can see how people would keep going back to that, because you can do that and then your anxiety can disappear.
But I wasn't having orgasms.
But a lot of people do. I mean, so you were using it for validation. Some people are using orgasm as mood regulator. Yeah. And it's just and it that accounts for a lot of porn use as well. Because then it's not the orgasm, it's the click and load dopamine that they're looking for, rather than the oxytocin at the end. So it's so in fact, they don't want to come. They want the opposite. They want to keep clicking and loading. And it's just what so many people do at the moment. And you think, well, how do you learn? Somebody's got to teach you at some point how to manage your mood, rather than you at 8 years old finding, oh, here's a way, which is what's happening a lot more now.
Yeah,
exactly. Right. I'm conscious of time. So let's end on this. Tell us about your book, because
I think... Sunday Times bestseller.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Tell us about the book.
Actually, the book actually goes into quite a lot of the stuff that we've spoken about. Mm. It's really what I wish I'd read before I jumped into the world of dating after having had my son. The landscape had changed massively. I'd been in a long-term relationship since my early 20s, became a single mother, and then I was launched into this completely different world. Like, apps had been born. So not only was I a single parent, but everything had changed, and I made every mistake that you could possibly make. I got into situationships without realizing. I got ghosted. I got catfished. You know, every pitfall and red flag, I jumped into everything in the wrong way. And this book really is everything that I wish somebody had told me before I did that. And then, yeah, hopefully it's encouraging people. I want the book to make people feel like there is hope. Some men are bloody brilliant. Just because you've met 50 on the apps who are complete pieces of shit doesn't mean that's all that's out there, but you are going to be much less likely to get attached to the pieces of shit if you go into it with all of this knowledge. So I mean, people are still going to date pieces of shit after reading the book, I'm sure of it, but hopefully they will feel a bit more empowered and a bit stronger and a bit better equipped to deal with it all.
Exactly. Well, I feel like after listening to this, hopefully people will as well. Lala, thank you so much again for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. You're both fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much.
Honestly.
Thank you too.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.